This episode is sponsored by Tin Can Timepieces. Looking for a watch that's built for anything life throws at you? Let me introduce you to Tin Can Timepieces. This is more than just a watch. It's a commitment to quality and purpose. Tin Can Timepieces is proudly based out of Georgia and is owned and operated by an active duty U.S. Navy submariner. That's right, a company built on discipline and precision. Every watch they create is handcrafted and features reliable automatic movements, ensuring you get a premium quality feel with every tick. Whether you need a rugged diver or a classic dress watch, Tin Can offers an assortment of styles for every mission. Tin Can Timepieces, hand-built for purpose, built for the depths. Dive deeper and check out their collection today at tincantime.com. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to this episode of the Pod Staff. With me today, I have Mr. Jordan Burnett. Thank you for coming, Jordan.
Thank you for having me, sir.
Of course. He goes by JB, too.
I don't know where that came from, to be honest. Like, I've never introduced myself as JB ever.
Well, it's like Mikey football or
no, exactly. Mike, that's what I'm saying. Up, yeah, like, so. It was never like, hey, call me JB, guys. Like, please call me JB. It was just like, I've always been Jordan, and then Jordan Burnett, and then someone just
someone started at some point. Yeah, exactly. Like, who y'all talking about? So Jordan and I have known each other for probably about 15 years now. We grew up together playing football, riding dirt bikes, all that cool stuff. And Jordan is now a licensed realtor in the DFW area. So if you just want to tell us a little bit about your background and kind of your real estate operation right now.
Got you. So I got my license. It'll be 3 years in May of next year, of like 2026. So, I mean, my first year was absolutely rough. Actually, getting my license was kind of rough because I was still playing baseball at the same time. Mm-hmm. So
in college, right?
Well, it was independent pro ball. So, like, okay. Actually, I was technically getting paid to play. And that was when I was in New Mexico and California. And I was still studying to get my license at the same time. So, like, I was doing it online and in person. So it was kind of tough at the time. And then once baseball was over, it was real easy to just jump all the way into it and just hit the ground running studying. And I'm not going to lie, I failed the test the first time. Really? Like, I don't know if like a lot of realtors will tell the truth about that, but
is that common? Like, do you hear that a lot?
I mean, it's 50-50. That's what I'm saying. Okay. So it's like some realtors will tell you the truth and be like, hey, like, mm-hmm. it's kind of tough. Like, I failed the first time. But some realtors, I feel like they're like, oh, like, the test was a breeze, like, blah, 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 blah. So it's like, all right, like, that's what I'm saying. It's a tough read. I don't know if, like...
Well, and I'm the type that, like, I always had really good grades, but I could never do well on, like, your standardized test.
Oh, 100%. That's
never.
That was the thing. That was the thing is when I was in class taking, like, all, like, because it's individual, how it's set up is individual classes. Mm-hmm. There's seven courses for, like, one will be, like, economics of, like, real estate. One will be... None of it really even teaches you how to sell a house, by the way. Mm-hmm. It's all just basically like the laws and stuff like that of real estate. And so like each individual class I was in, I'd take them because it's like, it's how it's set up is it's you get there in the morning, you pretty much go through the whole book the entire day because you're there for like 6 hours. You go through the entire book the first day and then the second day you show up and if you take like you take the test and if you pass, you're done with that course for like you're done.
Okay, you're just done.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. So you pass that course, you get your little certificate, and you need all of those certificates to take the final test.
How many is there?
Seven.
Seven.
Okay. Six or seven, yeah, I'm pretty sure. And so, yeah, all those classes in person were a breeze. And then I get to the final class that's, like, preparing you for the actual test, and I'm like, this doesn't feel like any of the stuff I just learned, like, literally last week.
Yeah.
It's completely different. Like you said, I'm the worst test taker. And, like, that's, like, when it was, like, taking those, like, ACT prep classes. Mm-hmm. It's, like... It feels like it helps, but at the same time, like, I just suck at taking tests.
Do you
like,
see a lot of people fail that real estate test, or have you heard about people doing that and then just not even trying again?
Again, that's probably, like, more 50-50. Like, it's, like, some people are really determined to get that their real estate license because that's really what they want to do. And then I think there's some people who are, like, they see it on TikTok or, like, they watch, like, Selling Sunset a couple times or some stuff like that.
We were just talking about that, about... people that want to be a realtor or they want to have rental properties or they want to start a podcast. Just in the category of one of those things where people say they want to do it and then they get cold feet or they kind 100%. Of try to do it and then they don't really fully do it and go all in.
100%. 100%. So like I would say it's again like 50-50 of like people who definitely fail that first time. And then they're just like, ah, like, that wasn't really for me. Like, they might think that's a sign from God that, like, oh, I'm not supposed to do this. Or, like, I need to go a different route with my life. So, it's like, I feel like certain people just experience it differently. And when I failed, like, I definitely took, like, a week or two of, like, is it really for me? Like, do I really want to do it? And then I thought back before even going to play college baseball of, like, I wanted to be a realtor straight out of high school. Like, that's what I wanted to do. So, I was like, why quit now?
So you look back on your dream as a kid.
Exactly.
My dream was always to be an entrepreneur. And,
exactly, of some sort, 100%.
I'm not a full-time entrepreneur right now, but I had a business in the past that you knew about.
Exactly.
And that's still my dream. Like, mm-hmm. while I will have jobs in between because I want to learn about, you know, the skills it takes to get there.
Absolutely.
I still have to remember back to that 10-year-old kid that was going door-to-door selling ice cream or
yeah, 100%. Door,
washing cars for $10.
You had your lawn, yeah, you had your lawn mowing service yeah. and yeah, everything. So no, I 100% agree with that. So it's like I looked back and I was like, and I did all that schooling. Like it's like I went to school again, which it was not like regular school. It definitely felt different. Like I wanted to be there, so it's a lot different. But I did all that schooling, so it was like, what's the point of going through all that schooling just to fail the test one time and not like at least try again? Mm-hmm. Like at least give it one more try. So and. When you fail the realtor test, because you have to take a national test and a state test, and I'm pretty sure I failed the national part, which is the harder one, and I failed the state one. So when you fail them, you don't have to take both. You only take the one again that you failed.
Yeah.
So I was like, why? Like, it's not like it's like super hard. It's not like I have to do the whole thing over again. It's
so if you fail one, you can just take the other in place of that one.
Well, no, you still have to, pass both, but like if you pass the one, it doesn't like cancel out it doesn't cancel out because you failed the other, if that makes sense.
I got you.
Like it's two complete, like you go in and take two separate tests and if you pass one, you pass one. If you fail the other, you're like, okay, you have to just take that one again.
Okay. So schooling isn't nothing to become a realtor.
And people always ask me this too. It's like with the schooling, I personally did not have the attention span. Like when I was taking it online, like I sucked at it. Like I was failing like some of the quizzes and stuff like that. But as soon as I did it in person, like it felt way better because I personally don't have the attention span to do stuff like that, like sitting in my office like that, taking tests and stuff like
that. So it's like any schooling, you could do it online or you can do it.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha. I'm sure there's a lot of places to probably do it in DFW, right?
I don't know of too many. I did a little bit of research and I found Champions was like the best.
Okay. Where's that at?
There's a couple locations. The one I went to is in Fort Worth. There's one in Dallas. And then they have also offer online.
Okay. Moving on. I kind of want to get into the topic of a couple of topics within a broader topic of like the DFW market pulse.
Yeah.
Because this is one of, if not the most competitive real estate markets in the whole nation.
No, 100%.
I would assume it's in the top 10.
100%, it's definitely in the top 10, yeah, for sure.
Absolutely. So you've got all these realtors. It's not like you're small town living.
Yeah.
There's three realtors in the town, and you know who to go to. You really have to try to make a name for yourself.
Oh, 100%.
So I first want to see how you have done that in this DFW market, because you're at the point now where you're making a living being a realtor.
Yeah. So it definitely was tough my first, like, I would say year and a half, honestly, because the first year and a half, it's like you don't expect people to just know you're a realtor, but like at the same time, you kind of do because like they're your friends and your family, not like everybody, not people you're just walking past and stuff like down the street, but like your friends and your family, like you just expect them to like see maybe an Instagram post that you passed your test or something like that. And then like you expect them to hit you up to buy a house, lease anything. So it's like that was my downfall as like my first year and a half, I would say, is like I definitely was like okay about posting on social media about me being a realtor and like me like working, but at the same time I didn't have enough actual clientele to post about at the same time, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So it's like it was definitely my fault that like a lot of people didn't know I was a realtor. So it was like my first year and a half was like brutal because I sold my parents a house and then I sold one of my friend's parents a house that in my first year and that was it.
Okay.
Sold two houses my first year.
Yeah.
And so my first year it's like, damn, do I really want to do this? And then I sat down one day, looked it up on the internet. I'm like, how many realtors quit in the first year? And it's like more than, I think it was like, this is the stat at the time is like 75 to 60% quit in the first year. And I was like, one, I can't be that part of that stat. And two, I was like, it also makes so much sense because I feel like people think that being a realtor, like you're just going to join a brokerage and like things are just going to be like,
they're going to pass you warm leads all the time.
Exactly.
They're going to dish out.
Yeah, they're going to pass you warm leads. People are going to be coming into the office all the time, just being like, oh, I want to buy a house, stuff like that. So it's like, and it's not that at all. Like you can join a brokerage and like, it depends on the brokerage, but you can join a brokerage and like they can train you up and teach you all these things, but it's like, you still have to put yourself out, because you're essentially starting your own business. Mm-hmm. So you literally like have to put yourself out there in whichever way, shape, or form that you can possibly think of. And so like it got to the point where I really had to sit myself down and was like, do I really want to do this again? I feel like being a realtor is like a very roller coaster of emotions, especially like that first year.
Well, and a decision to stick it out, because I think it's interesting that you say you looked up that specific stat.
No, literally.
Because if I was you looking up that stat, I would say, wow, so if I just keep
grinding, exactly, just keep grinding
past
somehow.
This first year,
yeah,
maybe year 3, 4, 5,
yeah,
what am I going to look like? Because then your competition narrows.
Exactly, 100%. So it's just like that first year and a half was brutal. So then it just gets to the point where you got to really put yourself out there. And then that was the point where I made a whole separate Instagram for my realtor stuff.
I was going to ask about that.
Yeah. So
I see that a lot with realtors.
Exactly. So like I've really like, and I really started slacking with that again, but like I've really started trying to like build up a clientele just based off of like social media and stuff like that. And it's actually worked. Like I've had, this year alone, I've had 6 leases done just off of social media.
Nice.
And that's the crazy thing is, if you look at my social media right now, I didn't even post that much this
year. What's
your handle? My Instagram handle for my realtor stuff is realtor.jb.
Okay. Realtor.jb.
Yes, sir. But I literally just post stories of like me in like an apartment, and like this is, and I would like just have like a little caption of like, oh, this is what you can get for X amount, whatever it is. And then I'll literally have people like keep track of it and like tell me how many people send it, and it'll have like 60 sends and stuff like that.
Because there's usually when on the leases, there's usually a line item for you can put a realtor that helped you on there. So even if, you know, I've heard of situations where maybe someone went to the leasing office themselves and did
100%.
They still put their friend's name down because it's no skin off their back, and their friend gets $300 or $500.
Exactly, 100%. And like even as a realtor, like doing it even more, like getting it into it with leasing a house and stuff like that, it's so much more fun doing it that way, because it's like I feel like you get more bang for your buck, and I get to help you more with it when it's a house. Like I like to not necessarily steer people in that way, but it's like, I've looked at like so many properties in this specific area, like Flower Mound, Colleyville, Grapevine, and you can get the pretty much more bang for your buck. You can get a house for damn near the same apartment price, like Dallas.
Yeah, I have friends that pay more to live in an apartment than I pay to live in this house.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's like, and I feel like people don't understand that. And then like to segue into something real quick, it's like with a big like topic I always get asked is like, how's the market? Mm-hmm. And it's like, people always want to talk about the market, but it's like, if you can afford the crazy price of being in Dallas, like the rent of like $2,500, and then you can afford the down payment, you might as well just move into a house. Because the market, I feel like, is always based off of, not quote unquote, but based off of interest rates, and that's what scares people. But I don't think interest rates are high right now. It's just I feel like people are still stuck on the COVID interest rates of like
getting a really good deal,
getting like a super good deal of like what their friends got when they got lucky, getting a COVID house and like stuff like that. And it's like, I think we'll never be back down to 4 interest rates.
Yeah, I had a question on here to ask you about just those interest rates, because a lot of people are a lot of people our age too are waiting. Maybe they do have savings right now where they could put the down payment on, but they're waiting right now for the interest rates to go down. And I mean, do you even think that they're going to go down?
I think they're going to go down, but I don't think they will ever be back down to what we saw during COVID and like when the houses were flying off the market and there was bidding wars and people were paying $50,000 over asking price just because the interest rates were so good and everybody was trying to buy a house, which is another point I would like to make is like, if the interest rates are going to come down so good, you're going to end up paying for it later because you're probably going to have to pay $50,000 to $60,000, maybe $80,000 over asking price just because everybody is going to be putting in an offer on that house. And you have to make your offer substantial because someone that really wants that house and has the money is going to put in an offer like $50,000 over just to make sure theirs gets looked at. Like they might know it's not even going to get accepted, but they're going to put $50,000 over just to make sure theirs gets looked at. So
I see now they have like a lot of people are doing price cuts on their house.
Exactly.
They're listing too high. So
exactly.
Your take is that it really is an offset. So it's pretty even in terms of the price of the house, especially in a bidding war.
100%.
Versus right now you could buy a house for $350,000. They're probably just going to say, awesome, I'm glad we sold it this quick, right?
Exactly. So, like, I would say it's definitely an ebb and flow of, like, if you're thinking you're going to get a great interest rate that's awesome. But like I said, you're probably gonna have to pay minimum probably like $10,000, $20,000 over, because everybody and their mom's getting a great interest rate, mm-hmm. and they probably want the same house that you do. Mm-hmm. And you're gonna have to make a competitive offer to even get your offer looked at on the table.
Now, there are some people that would say, well, yeah, that might be true up front, but mm-hmm. over the course of my 30-year mortgage, that interest rate is going to be substantially more than that. What would you say to that?
I mean, if you really believe that the interest rates are going to come down, then just refinance. Mm-hmm. When they do come, like, if you really believe in your hearts of hearts, like you said, people are waiting for the interest rates to come down to go back to whatever it was, fours, fives, like, and some people even are getting like high fives right now. Mm-hmm. Like, if you have a great credit score, like stuff like that, like people don't understand, like stuff like that plays a part into it. Just because you see certain people getting sevens, eights, like high nines, stuff like that, doesn't mean you as a person can't get a better like interest rate than they can.
Is that something that the realtor can negotiate?
That's not something we can negotiate. That's a lender question. That's okay. More of like a lender question. But
before we move on to anything else, I do gotcha. Want to touch on what you said about if you can afford rent of say $2,500 to $3,000 in a market like this,
yeah.
with a down payment that you have saved up.
Yeah.
You say, then why not just move into a house? But a lot of people, myself included, mm-hmm. would say, because I like the flexibility of when something breaks, someone comes and fixes it next day. And that's not the case everywhere, but
100%.
I have a really good landlord.
Yeah, 100%.
So, and he hasn't raised the rent the yeah. entire time I've lived here.
Yeah.
And after a full year, mm-hmm. my lease went month to month, so I've got flexibility.
100%. Okay, so like in a case like yours, you honestly haven't made like... I think a lot of people would kill to be in a spot.
Shout out Tom Manchester.
Yeah, shout out Tom Manchester. But I think a lot of people would kill to be in a spot like that. But it's like a lot of people are stuck in, not even stuck, but a lot of people are in an apartment that they love or might like it, but like not necessarily the best part of town, or they may be close to work, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's like if you're going to pay all that, you're not getting any equity.
Mm-hmm. That part sucks. I mean,
yeah,
that part does suck.
And that's really my only argument. And like, that's all like, and like, I really can't even say like, that's like a huge point, because like, I understand like you don't have to pay for anything that breaks and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, my point would be, it's like, I want to have equity in something that like, I can sell at the end of the day, mm-hmm. or like I can at least know that I'm putting when I'm paying that $2,500 mortgage, that like, I could potentially get that back one day when I sell this house in a couple mm-hmm. years, 10 years, whatever it is.
Right.
So it's just like, it's tough for me, at least, I think that's, I guess it's just me as like a realtor perspective. It's just like, I just like want the equity at the end of the day. Like to
talk
know,
to us about equity though. I think equity is a term that's thrown around in a lot of markets, real estate market especially.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think a lot of, especially younger people our age, maybe even a little older than us, mm-hmm. kind of nod their head and they're like, yeah. And they just end the conversation because they don't want to ask because it's gone on too long. Explain the concept of equity to our listener.
I would say the concept of equity in real estate is over time, the price that you bought your house for 9 times out of 10 is going to go up when you are going to sell it like at a later date. Mm-hmm. Essentially, that money you're putting into the house, it's building up instead of you're not paying someone else's mortgage.
So same concept as in I'm investing $20,000 into the S&P 500 at a average 8% return rate over the next 30 years.
Exactly.
That additional, when I go and sell it in 30 years to pull my money out and spend it,
exactly.
That's my equity. That's the same concept, right?
Exactly. Because when I'm showing you a house, like to buy, for let's say, for example, I'm showing you a house that you want to buy, I'm 100% going to pull up the taxes and show you either this house is, it's either gone up or down before we even do anything else. Cause like, I'm going to let you know, you either have to pay this much in taxes and the taxes are going up or down in this neighborhood specifically and all that good stuff before you even like want to write a contract on that
yeah.
house.
Yeah.
So it's like equity is like based on how much taxes you put into your house, essentially.
I want to talk about the northward expansion in the DFW market. So Frisco and Prosper are absolutely booming, especially, you know, a lot of our listeners have probably heard, even if they don't live around DFW, that Frisco at one point in time, I don't know if it still is, mm-hmm. was the fastest growing city in America. I think they're up to 12 or 15 high schools.
Yeah.
And I think what I'd like to know, in your opinion, is what's that next, like, boom town for for the real estate market, that it's growing, but it's not to the point where the real estate is as high as it's going to be in the next 3 to 5 years?
I would take a guess and say Justin, Texas, for us, would be our next like little boom town, because we already have like the Speedway and there's a Buc-ee's out there and stuff like that.
And they got a mall.
They have a mall now, exactly. They have that Tanger Outlet and stuff like that. And I think people are going to start to move out towards that way because, like you said, Frisco, Prosper, and out that way are starting to be not necessarily congested, but definitely a little more congested and stuff like that. So I would say our next like boom town and like the way people are going to start moving would be like Justin, like that like northern area of like the racetrack and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I think people really like Frisco and Prosper, that area, because they have a great infrastructure. Like, they built a great infrastructure over there. And, like, there's so much, like, people's, there's so many jobs over there that people probably don't have to drive too far from and stuff like that. And there's a good amount of, like, office buildings down there that are definitely, like, big corporate, like, jobs.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's like, corporate offices there.
Exactly.
The Dallas Cowboys has their corporate office.
Exactly. Exactly.
So, yeah, I think a lot of those areas are growing infrastructure that's faster than other towns, because a lot of people think, to get the big job, the big corporate job, you have to go to Fort Worth or Dallas.
Yeah.
But that's no longer the case. I mean, you can go to Richardson, Plano, Frisco, 100%. All those areas too.
100%.
I want to move on to just kind of that reality check, like you said, with the interest rates.
Yeah.
What would you say, like in your honest sales pitch to someone who's your client at that point in time, what would you say helps them get off that fence of, well, maybe I should just wait a little. Like, what's your just nugget piece of advice on that?
Nugget piece of advice would be, if you're paying anywhere from, I would say, $23,000 to $3,000 in your lease, and you can afford that, you may not like it, but you can afford that with the job you have, the career you have, whatever it is, and you have your down payment saved up, I feel like there is absolutely no reason you shouldn't at least think about buying a house. Because if you truly believe that the interest rates are going to come down, you might as well, like I said, buy that house now, because it's that ebb and flow of either you're going to pay for it now with the interest rate, or you're going to pay for it later with the lower interest rate and having to overpay on the price of the house. And like, that's my honest opinion. And so I feel like some people take it and they're like, okay, it makes sense. And some people are just like, they understand, but like at the same time, it doesn't.
And it's such a big amount of money.
No, it is. Like, and that's what I tell them too.
Like, it's not like a $200 item that you're trying to get someone over the hump on. These can be very expensive.
And also I'd like to say, it's like, I definitely don't try to like convince anybody of doing anything. I just like to give them that information of like, that's how I've always seen it work. It's like, okay, when the interest rates were lower, people were paying more up front because they had to, everybody was wanting that house and everybody had a low interest rate. When the interest rates are higher, people are paying less up front, but they are paying more, essentially more, with the higher interest rates. But when the interest rates do even slash a little bit, you can refinance your interest rate.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, now I'm paying what I thought I would be paying, and I'm in the house that I wanted.
Right. Yeah, I think that scares a lot of people. But
100%.
With you describing it that way, you know, hopefully maybe someone listening gets over that hump.
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
I do want to talk about the young agent advantage. I think we talked about it a little bit with the social media, the Instagram page, 100%. Stuff like that. But just like that digital hustle where, you know, now we've got AI tools and we've got TikTok and Instagram versus old school, like door knocking or passing out business cards door to door, stuff like that.
And that's crazy you say door knocking, is because, like, first of all, as a large black man in Texas, I never door knocked.
Really?
Never.
Because of that reason.
No, and it's not to say anybody's racist or anything like that. It's just, I feel like even if I was at home and someone my size knocked on my door, even with a little name tag on, if I'm thinking they're trying to sell me anything, first of all, I don't want to be bothered like that. And second of all, it's like, I don't think I'd open the door for you, buddy.
Every now and again, I'll give someone an opportunity. Honestly, if I'm in a good mood that day and I have a minute to see, you know, maybe I can at least give this guy the opportunity to sharpen his sales pitch. I'm 100%. Not buying. I already know that.
I already know
I'm not buying. Yeah. But I think that that's a fair point, especially in this DFW market where we don't, you know, you hear things on the news all the
time. It's just like,
we don't know you from Adam.
Exactly. And I feel like a lot of people, like, it's like, that's what, in this day and age, like, door knocking is so hard because it's like, I feel like everyone thinks everything's a scam or like someone's trying to hurt you or like someone's trying.
Dude, how could you not?
No, 100. I'm not saying people shouldn't think that. It's just like, it's so hard to like even convince myself that, like, oh yeah, let me go knock on people's doors and be like, are you even interested in selling your house? It's like, I don't have anything to sell you. I don't, other than myself. And it's like, at that time when I first became a new agent, it's like, I don't have any sales under my belt. Mm-hmm. I don't have, like, I don't really have anything. It's just, I just have me. So it's like, what am I even going to sell these people on myself? And I'm just knocking on your door.
Do you see people still doing that?
I mean, I haven't seen it in person, but like I see people on TikTok and
that's what I mean.
Yeah, I mean, I see people saying they do it, but I don't think that. I think a lot of people on TikTok, like when they say they're door knocking and stuff like that, I personally think they are faking that. Mm-hmm. Like I've never like because they never one the conversations that they have, they never seem really too genuine. Like it always seems like it was like kind of like, hey, like you were my client already, but like can I like pre-record this with you? Like they already had them as a client, if that makes sense.
No,
and then they like come back and then
the image that is created by a lot of this TikTok and Instagram, social media in general these days. And then you've got AI now that man, I get tricked all the time.
Oh, 100%. You definitely have to watch a couple of videos like back a couple of times. Like, oh, okay. Like,
yeah. It's just outlandish.
No, 100%.
Yeah.
But back to the social media thing, So I would say I definitely went more the social media route because a lot of the older people in real estate will definitely tell you, like, 2.5 years ago when I first started at Keller Williams, they literally were still talking about door knocking and doing stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And even sitting there, like, hearing these people say how successful they were doing that stuff, I was thinking, I'm like, there's just no way that works in this day and age. Like, with everyone being, like I said, so scared of, like, scammers being hurt, like, people just knocking on, random people knocking on their doors and stuff like that. I'm like, there's just no way that works. So I definitely went the social media route of just reposting other agents' stuff and, like, posting other agents' houses and stuff like that. And that would even get me, like, it wouldn't necessarily get me clients, but that would get me followers and, like, people just wanted to see the information that I was reposting and stuff like that. So I would definitely say, like, the social media route is not easier, but it's definitely more effective in this day and age because even your like oldest people, I feel like nowadays are on social media of some sort. Like their grandkids are sending them TikToks, like it was sending them reels on Instagram. Like I feel like most people have like some form of social media nowadays, like even the older people. So it's like, how could you not want to at least move that direction a little bit for sure?
Yeah, absolutely. Even my girlfriend's dad that we were talking about earlier, he's great guy, very old school.
Yeah.
He's got TikTok. He likes my TikToks all the time.
Exactly.
It's awesome. It's nice to have that support. And you 100%. Don't realize that most people, you think it's just young people, but it's not. It's most people are on Instagram, TikTok, 100%. At least LinkedIn.
Yeah. And they might not, LinkedIn. They might not even be posting stuff, but they're definitely out there liking and reposting. They're definitely scrolling. Like, I feel like people definitely don't think like a lot of the older generation is scrolling like as much as they like to admit that they
are. Yeah. They don't admit it.
Yeah.
You can see it in the likes.
100% for sure.
That's actually a good segue into my next question, which is, you know, the solo agent versus team agent. Mm-hmm. You mentioned Keller Williams.
Yeah.
What's your take on successful endeavors being a solo agent starting out versus coming in to be a team member at a company like Keller Williams or some of these other big realtors?
Got you. So yeah, first 6 months it was absolutely great because they gave me a lot of new agent training, which I feel like was what I needed outside of just passing my test. Because like I said, passing the test doesn't teach you how to sell a house. It's just like the laws you need to know, the ins and outs of like, I don't even remember what's on that test. That's what I'm saying. Like, it has nothing to do with actually selling a house, or anything you really do.
I think a lot of schooling is like that, though. I personally feel like I have used my college degree in life.
And that's sick. I wish I could say
that. But I did entrepreneurship and corporate innovation. So it was real life examples. And I think a lot of schooling is not real life examples.
Exactly.
But it is, I think, if anything, it proves discipline.
No, 100%. It proves
that you stuck to something for
a
year, 4 years, whatever it may be.
100%.
And even if it's not directly correlated to it, I think it's still, that's why it looks good to have. So I'm not saying you have to have it.
Yeah.
But it does look good to a lot of employers and companies just to show that you had that discipline to stick it out.
No, 100%. So I would say like after getting my license, becoming an agent with Keller Williams was great because they taught me a lot of like, they had me in a lot of classes and it was like a lot of classes about how to become a realtor and like how to sell yourself and like how you need to, you're essentially setting up your own business and how to set up your own business and all that good stuff. But as soon as all that ended, it felt like I was just like kind of put on, like it felt like I was kind of just thrown into the deep water and just like kind of left to like.
So it was only 6 months of that. So they did invest in you at first.
Yes.
But it was an ongoing training. Do you think it's because it's expensive for them to do?
No. And it's not even because it's expensive. It's because what they have you doing is essentially you're in there with a bunch of other realtors that have been with that brokerage for a long time, and they're just telling you like how they did it, essentially, like going over stuff like that, teaching you stuff like that. And so like those other realtors kind of get to the point of like, okay, I kind of done everything for you I can,
right?
And it's like I can't really just give you leads or anything like that. And so like they stay in touch with you, like they try to keep up with you and stuff like that, but like I said, they're also running their own business, they have their own clients that they're dealing with and stuff like that. So it's like it kind of like felt like I was kind of just thrown into the deep water, and like they would check on me every now and then and stuff like that. And I didn't necessarily love that, but I also didn't hate it at the same time, which was weird because it was my first year as a realtor. I didn't know how to like feel about it, because like my whole time being in school and all that stuff, my whole like idea was like, oh yeah, no one's gonna be my boss, I get to make my own schedule, like I don't have to be anywhere at a certain time. So like it was like great, but at the same time it felt like
you wanted a little structure.
Yeah, exactly.
You wanted something ongoing to
to
still keep you, at least maybe to give you the confidence ongoing that
exactly.
you're still moving in the right direction.
Exactly. So like when that fell off, it was like I said, that year and a half, it was brutal because it was kind of trying to find the identity of being like who I wanted to be as a realtor, really. Like it was like, do I want to try to be like this super infamous like social media person? Do I want to door knock?
Finding out who you are.
Exactly.
In your profession. And I think,
100%.
I think a lot of people, if you're in the right profession,
yeah.
I think it's a controversial topic about should you put your identity in your profession? And the short answer, in my opinion, is no.
Mm-hmm.
However, there always is going to be some level of it. I mean, Tony Robbins talks about how if your business is doing good,
yeah,
a lot of times it correlates to you having a little more happiness and confidence in your life. It's not that it's because having your identity and work is great, but it's because if we're all honest, there is some level of that in every single profession.
100%.
I want to get your thought on maybe a couple of areas, but kind of that hidden gem in DFW. I know we talked some about Justin. Yeah. That's kind of a more well-known gem.
Yeah.
Do you have any hidden gem areas that you have in mind?
Honestly, like with everybody moving to Texas and everything like that, I feel like it's like really hard to find a spot that's not even like well known at this point, because like I would even say like Flower Mound, like a lot of people, like there's a lot of like lease properties over here that I see for great prices, and like I'll check them out and like they'll be gone in like a week or two.
Yeah.
So I feel like a lot of families or like even like maybe young single people like are moving out of Dallas a little bit, because I see a lot of lease properties in Grapevine, Colleyville, Southlake, even Southlake and stuff like that, just they'll be on the market for like a week or two and they'll be leased out.
Yeah, because Grapevine and Flower Mound were probably considered hidden gems whenever we were
100%.
They're still kind of in that more well-known, but still that gem market.
100%.
Because the schools, the areas, the shopping centers, the access to things overall.
And even if you're not a single family, like even if you're a young person, I would say like living in Grapevine, Colleyville, you're still in a great area because there's stuff around you immediately to do, but you're also still 30 minutes away from Dallas, 30 minutes away from Fort Worth. So like if that's where you work or if that's where your friends are and that's where you want to hang out and stuff like that, like I feel like Grapevine, Colleyville, Flower Mound, like this whole area is just like a perfect middle ground in general for whatever you want to do.
There's offices already built.
Yeah.
And Grapevine and Flower Mound, stuff like that. Maybe
all
not
kinds
big
of stuff.
Skyscrapers.
Yeah, definitely not big skyscrapers, but there's plenty of nice like those, like they look like houses, like those nice little like house.
They may be smaller businesses, but they're still headquarters of businesses.
Yeah,
so I can only imagine what it's going to look like in 10 years.
For sure.
I would like to get back into, you said single family versus being a younger person, and kind of doing things on your own.
Yeah.
For that single family, how important would you say, I guess, the school districts are? I know it is important, but do you ever see people just completely walk out on a deal because the school system isn't the top notch in the DFW Metroplex?
I wouldn't say completely walk out on a deal, but like I definitely see parents concerned. It's not even a concern. It's just like that's a lot of people's first question. Like with like any time I show them a property do have kids that are going to be going to elementary, middle school, they're like, what middle school would they be going to? Like they always ask for like the stats on them because like that's an easy thing.
So you have to have that on deck whenever you
usually
go show a house.
100%. And like that's something we have access. It's easily accessible on stuff. But like it's just a quick printout.
Have you ever been caught in a scenario where you're like, I don't. Let me look that up for you.
Yeah, 100%. When I was like, that was the thing. Like when I was first becoming a realtor, like going to show a house to like some of these people, like I was definitely underprepared. Mm-hmm. And like, I definitely just faked it till I made it like 100%. Like yeah. Definitely got caught.
You have to in anything. Really.
Yeah. And definitely got caught sometimes, but definitely sometimes I just faked it till I made it. And it definitely worked out. Like, it's just like the deal still goes through. Like people yeah. definitely still like,
and
they
can
trust
me. And your intention was still good 100%, while you were doing it.
100%.
So it's not
yeah.
like you were scamming someone. You yeah. just didn't know everything that you know now.
Exactly. 100%. It's yeah. like people would ask me certain things about a house and like, I'd be like, ooh, like that's a great question. Like I'm going to remember that for next time. Like, so I can look that up before we
right.
get to this house and stuff like that. So like I've definitely learned a lot just by the experience of putting myself out there and showing as many houses as I possibly could and having open houses like for the brokerage that I was working for and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I would definitely say it just comes down to really like being a realtor definitely just comes out to being able to put yourself out there, especially that first year and a half, whether even if you're not selling any houses or anything like that, just being able to put yourself out there and practice being a realtor, like just holding open houses mm-hmm. and just like showing houses, even if you're not like getting the closing the deal or anything like that, just practicing and doing all that kind of stuff, like it'll work out in the end for sure.
Fix and flips.
Mm-hmm.
What's your take on fix and flips? A lot of people say yes, a lot of people say no. In this current market, mm-hmm. what's your opinion?
First of all, it's not even about this. My answer is not even about the market right now. It's kind of tough with fix and flips to even get certain loans and stuff right now, because a lot of banks want you to live in the house for at least a year. Mm-hmm. So it's like a lot of that's where like the term fix and flip, it scares a lot of people when they hear that, because it's like, oh, I wanted to just buy this house real quick, do a couple modifications and mm-hmm. sell it.
Some people still do it. And
yeah.
They just don't get caught.
Exactly.
But what's the risk there?
I mean, it's not even a risk. Like, I think they just, like, a lot of people, I think they just don't get loans from the bank, and they just have the capital themselves to actually buy the house and be able to flip it really quick.
Right.
But if you wanted to get a loan from the bank to actually, which you can, to flip a house, they technically want you to live in it or own it for a year before you sell it.
Right.
So, like, I mean, a lot of people's get around from that is they'll buy the house, do what they need to do, fix it up and all that stuff, and then lease it out for about a year. Because it doesn't say you have to live in it. It just says you have to own it for essentially a year.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of people will just lease it out for that year and then end up selling it after that year.
Okay.
But it's I personally, fix and flips are tough for me, because it's like, if you don't have the immediate capital yourself, I would say, like, it's kind of like you're asking the bank for a loan and then you're gonna have to pay that back. And so it's like, you're not gonna make all the, like, the money that you like see all these people making, I feel like,
yeah,
if that makes sense.
In terms of money, what's an average range that someone year 2, 3, 4 could mm-hmm. make as a realtor if they're doing it full time? Mm-hmm. Maybe they had that tough first year, but they yeah. stuck it out.
Yeah.
What's an average range?
To make an easy example, let's say you sell a house a month in the $300,000 to $400,000 range, depending on if you got your 3% and then your brokerage splits and all that stuff. Let's just say clean cut flat, you get your 3%. You and your brokerage, you get 90%, they get 10%.
Okay.
So that would be about $10,000 each house you sold for each month.
Yeah, so 12 houses a year.
Yeah.
You can make $120,000.
$120,000. Yeah. And that's you doing, and that's me as a realtor. That's like my minimal goal, mm-hmm. like for, especially going into 2026, is to sell a house or at least a lease house a month. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like $120,000 as a like base goal is very good. And then let's say I sell 2 to 3 houses in 1 month and then keep that goal going at 111. And then I throw in a $1.2 million house sold or had a client buy one like that. Mm-hmm. Then I made $30,000 off just that one sale. So it's like, if you can keep it consistent, I feel like you can easily make 6 figures a year.
Mm-hmm. And that's pretty doable if you...
100%. If you're on your grind and you're keeping people in your pipeline, that's what I struggled with my first year, was like when I was working with someone so intently that I wouldn't be worried about my next client, if that makes mm-hmm. sense. So like I would be working, but then as soon as I finished that contract for that person I was working with,
your pipeline was dry.
Exactly. So I could have, as soon as I finished that contract, I should have been making calls, like trying to get another client, stuff like that. But I was felt like since I was working with that client, I felt like I was doing enough.
Yeah.
And so like my
pipeline, like, I mean, that just says a lot about you, because
yeah.
you felt like you're giving that client your all,
mm-hmm.
but at the same time, there's got to be a balance there, because
yeah.
you can still give someone your all, but mm-hmm. still take care of you for your future.
100%. So that's where I definitely struggled with that my first year and a half, but I've definitely gotten better with that. So that's why I say my biggest goal into 2026 with that is definitely just to keep my pipeline flowing, as because I've done a really good job about it at the end of this year. So I definitely just want to keep it going into 2026 for sure.
Yeah. Last thing about being a realtor.
Okay.
To anyone listening out there that's maybe in realtor school, thinking about going to realtor school, maybe they're 8 months into that first year where it sucks.
Yeah.
What's your last piece of advice to them to keep going?
If you really enjoy the lifestyle of real estate, because I'd say, first of all, like being a realtor is super fun, I think, because like you get to see so many cool houses, and then you're seeing them with like your client, and then when they walk in and like they're like, oh my God, like I love this house, and like you see their reaction and all that stuff, like it's honestly so rewarding and so fulfilling. So like if you really enjoy real estate alone and you're not thinking about the money and stuff like that, I think you should stick it out 100%. The money's great and it'll come. But like if you really enjoy real estate, just 100% stick it out, because it'll always be worth it in the end.
Yeah.
Because seeing people, like especially I got to sell this older couple, like their probably their last house they're ever going to buy. And they absolutely loved it. And it was the coolest experience that I got to be a part of, because when we showed them two houses. The very first house they walked into, the older lady fell in love with it.
Yeah.
The husband's just like, I'm just kind of here. Like, but the lady fell in love with it. And
seeing that light bulb go off, yeah, like, oh,
yeah,
I bet that's very
It's just
satisfying.
So cool. Yeah, it's just so satisfying to see people like, and like I said, it was probably their last house I'll ever buy. So it's like, it's cool for me to be a part of that experience 100%.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah, that's a very genuine take. Well, thank you for all the real estate knowledge, advice. I'm sure someone out there is going to at least take a piece of that advice and be able to use that advice in real estate.
Yeah.
All right, moving on. Just the last quick topic I want to talk about is just with your experience. You know, you were a baseball player.
Yeah.
You had some tough experiences early on with being a realtor, and moving on into, you know, a couple years in or a handful of years in. What's your mental health been like in that roller coaster of emotions that you mentioned?
I mean, honestly, when COVID hit, I was my junior year of college baseball. So like we just finished playing one of the toughest teams in our conference. I just played super well. I'm having a great junior season. And coach gets on the bus and he's talking about, hey guys, COVID, like, yeah, we're probably not gonna be able to play for a couple weeks is what he tells us. And then we get back to the school and he's already talking about, all right guys, like they're canceling the season, stuff like that. So I'm heartbroken. But coach gets on the bus, tells us we're not playing anymore, COVID hits, all that stuff. And so I don't even get to go back to school anymore, because they told us, since we're not playing baseball anymore, they're taking our scholarships away. And I was like, guys, I'm not paying for school when...
Just to play baseball.
Yeah, like, so essentially dropped out of school and then get to go play baseball in an independent pro league called the Pecos League. And that's when I started getting paid to play baseball a little bit. And I was in New Mexico and California, and that's when I started studying for my test. And after, like, all those years of playing baseball and all that stuff, and then just it's all of a sudden stopping, was probably the biggest ego death I've ever had to like deal with in my entire life. Not saying I thought I was gonna like be a millionaire from playing baseball or anything like that, which I mean, I feel like everyone who was an athlete at some point, you thought you were like a,
right.
But not saying I like thought that that was gonna happen, but it's just like the idea of not, like I trained every day essentially my whole entire life like to play baseball, and then just not being able to do that anymore was the weirdest experience, like waking up and being like, I don't have to work out anymore. Like, I don't have to do this. And like, honestly, I got to the point where I was gaining, I probably gained like 15, 20 pounds of like not good weight, and was just not, I would say depressed for a little bit. Like, just like.
I can imagine. I mean, I think a lot of us have had an ego death of some sort. I personally have had about five of them that I can think of.
Yeah, no, for
and
sure.
And every single time it stings in a different way.
Yeah, 100%. So it's just like, it was like, it got to the point where I was like, I really like had to like dig myself out of that, and was like, I knew I always wanted to be a realtor, but it was like, all right, now I got to really go do that. And like, it was like such a like shock that it was like, it's time to go do that instead of like go play baseball, if that makes sense. Like, it was such a
weird. And since it took over a year to start seeing those results.
Exactly.
That first year probably sucked.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what's even worse is like, with baseball, like I was doing all that training, I was seeing the results like immediately. And then so I go from that to doing all these tests, taking all these certificates, seeing results because I'm passing those tests and stuff like that immediately. But as soon as I take my test, pass, and I become a realtor, it's like, now I need more results and I'm not getting that. So it's like, now it's like, okay, I'm in my career. I did all that schooling. I did all that stuff. And it's like, I'm still not making any money. Like, I'm still just out here going through the motions, if that makes sense.
Right.
And it's like, it was really tough for sure.
Yeah, I can imagine. And I feel like I know depression well in my experience, and I do feel like hard work does not cure depression.
No, it really doesn't.
But it damn sure does help.
It definitely helps.
If you're in that place, at least, you know, get some exercise.
Yeah.
Work hard at whatever you're doing. It doesn't have to be something that's making you a ton of money.
Yeah.
But if you're in that place and you're at the place where you don't want to reach out for help yet, and you just want to help yourself, I mean, working hard in anything, exercise, being in community, finding, you know, if you went the realtor path, finding that realtor community.
I mean, absolutely.
I just joined a podcast community last week. Someone reached out to me about just being part of a new podcast community.
100%.
And I just said yes. So I think it's all about whenever things come your way, as long as they're good things, saying yes and not saying no and regretting it later.
Yeah, and that's another great thing is, like, I think a lot of people are scared of that, like, unknown and that uncomfortability, even when it is their career that they've always wanted. Because, like, that's how I was. Like, I definitely got invited to some, like, mixers and stuff like that with some, like, very, like, well-known realtors and stuff like that, and I didn't even go because I felt like, at that time, I shouldn't even, like, be in that room, if that makes sense. Like, I didn't deserve to be there.
Yeah, that's probably some of that depression time.
Exactly, that's what I'm saying.
State of mind at the time.
Yeah, so it's, like, it's crazy that, like, I feel like a lot of people, like, deal with that. So it's, like, if you can get through that, you should definitely just keep pushing through. And it's, like, it'll always be worth it in the end for sure.
Yeah.
And then, like you said, definitely reach out to help. If it's that bad, you definitely can't just do it by yourself. Definitely go reach out and get that help. Because if you would have asked me 3 years ago, I would have told you, Mikey, I'm never going to therapy. But about a year ago, I started going to therapy. So it's like, I feel like a lot of people don't want to talk about stuff like that, especially as men. So it's like, if you need that help, definitely get that help for sure.
Yeah. And this is coming from a realtor who's doing very well for himself right now, played baseball his entire life. Mental health does not have to look like anything. It
100%.
Can look like a man, a woman, short, fat, tall, black, white, whatever. It's very prevalent, and I think we need to talk about it more. So thank you for opening up on that.
100%.
And, dude, just thank you for being here today. I
really appreciate it. Yeah. Yes, sir. Thank you.